Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 126.
This week on the podcast, you might as well continue to peddle your crazy Ebola conspiracy theory. It's certainly not going to get unproven this week.
And teenager-led Hong Kong pro-democracy rallies are the most mature thing that's happening in Chinese politics right now.
In the midst of the Dear Leader discomfort saga of 2014, three senior North Korean officials took a journey to the land of the Choco Pie for a weekend of cookie gluttony and peace talks.
And the Secret Service is still roughly as capable as Lila's last run-in with them would suggest.
Mitt Romney continues to not run for president by being in Iowa and stumping with wingnut conspiracy theorist Joni Ernst.
And Russian bank hackers might have ties to the Russian government, which might be the most Russian story ever told.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. And that's where you should go.
That's right.
If you don't die of Ebola in the next week.
Go there quick.
Get there
and
fast.
And tell everyone that you know immediately, because this may be your last chance.
Now, we've been sending you really mixed messages about the Ebola thing, because I have long had a completely irrational fear of Ebola.
Right.
And this is only confirming everything I ever suspected, the way that my mom getting appendicitis confirmed that you might die of appendicitis at any moment.
Sure.
Because I've had that concern since I was about 10.
Yeah.
And Ebola is the other thing I always worried about. I don't know what it does or anything about it. This is the most I've known about Ebola the entire time I've been worrying about Ebola.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's happening is really panicking me. So as much as, like, as a reasonable person, I know not to panic about getting Ebola. Like, I haven't been to Liberia recently. Like, I don't really know anyone that's traveled there in the last few years. Like,
no.
I still, every time that I hear an Ebola report, am concerned that the entire world is going to die of Ebola.
Yeah.
Because it just seems like that's what Ebola does, you know?
Sure.
It's not right, but that's
right.
That's my feeling.
In your brain.
It's my feeling.
Yeah.
You can't argue with my feelings,
right.
You know?
But it's here now.
It's here now.
It hadn't been.
It was
a West Africa problem.
Every time that I've thought that maybe I was overreacting, something has confirmed my worst fears. So here we are. Someone in Dallas has Ebola. Yeah.
Right. He came from Liberia. His name's Thomas Eric Duncan. And he was admitted on September 26th. September 28th, excuse me. And he was initially sent home.
Right.
He went to the hospital.
They were like,
He had come from Liberia.
You're sick. Go home.
And he mentioned, apparently, to the nurse that he had come from Liberia.
Right.
At which point, they thought that he just had a cold, I think, and sent him home. Then, he arrived a few days later at the same hospital, this time in an ambulance with Ebola. So
that first time, he also had Ebola, but they just didn't think of it. Because who thinks to test for Ebola?
Right.
In Dallas.
Well, the thing is, though, is that everyone now should be thinking of
this. Yes, well, obviously.
And supposedly the CDC had, like, sent out, like, you know, like, information to, like, all the hospitals. Even this hospital said, like, in September that they had, like, all met to, like, you know, go over sort of, like, what the precautions were, like, if something like this were to happen.
Right.
And, like, I think this hospital then said, like, something about it got entered into his record by the nurse, but then, like, didn't get to his actual
doctor, physician,
or something like
that. It didn't really get communicated effectively through the hospital staff. So as much as he, like, they took a report of where he had traveled to, and they were like, oh, interesting, Liberia. And then no one else ever noticed it, ever again. Everyone was like, oh, been to Liberia. Well, then.
Until they had to,
because he
was
having Ebola.
Problem. Right, exactly.
And his condition is getting worse. He's not getting better.
No, he's not.
Which is my that's the thing about Ebola. It's very few people do get better.
I know. Well, I was listening on Meet the Press this morning to the head of the CDC, who's sort of like, you know, we can not cure it, but, like, you know, in America, you can sort of, like, you know, because generally how they treat it is, like, literally they just, like, give you fluids and, like, I think we've said before, like, they just sort of, like, make sure that they can, like, boost up your liver functions and, like, do just, like, random things that, like,
right.
normally attacks or whatever. So, because the other two people who have come here that we knew were coming here that had it, like, were fine, ultimately, after they just went to whatever hospital they went to. This is not seeming to be the case here. He hasn't died yet, but I think he's still in critical condition.
He was in serious condition, and it was upgraded on the 30th to critical condition.
Yeah.
So he's getting worse. They're monitoring the people that he came in contact with. There's 50 people being monitored. Nine were in direct contact with him, and four were relatives. And then everyone else is just someone who he happened to interact with.
Yeah.
People have gone through great pains to remind everyone that you don't necessarily get Ebola from, like, sitting next to a person with Ebola on the plane.
Right.
Because you have to have contact with bodily fluids. So, like, if you're just, like, sitting in the... It's not, like, airborne the way that, like, a cold might be.
Right.
But it's not born of things that you might touch or somehow interact with if you were living with a person or otherwise.
Right.
You know.
And, you know, there's a lot of... Since he got this diagnosis, there had been sort of like a lot of talk about like, you know, how did this happen? Because like in all of those West Africa countries, there's like, you know, there's screenings at the airport, and you have to like, if you're leaving the country, you have to like, you know, answer like a series of questions or whatever. And supposedly they are now saying that there's a strong possibility that he probably thought that he had Ebola because he was there. And, you know, there are witnesses who say that he was like helping out like a woman who had Ebola there. Right. And he also answered no to a bunch of questions about whether he'd come in contact with people who had Ebola. So it's like even to the point where the person who runs the Liberian Airport Authority is like saying that they are looking into this because they may end up prosecuting him, because it basically it looks for all the world like he sort of felt like he might had it
and was have like, it, let and, me get to a place and, where we can get treatment for
and
it.
Felt like America was the best place to not die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, and even the Liberian president said this week, he was like, he said, the fact that he knew he was exposed to the virus and he left the country is unpardonable, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Which is sort of true. Especially when it's like, I mean, we're trying to help them more than anybody is. It's kind of like...
it's hard, though, to kind of like, I think if it's hard, it's easy to make that claim as a just sort of like society.
Sure.
It's probably really hard to sit in a place with inadequate care.
Yeah, of course.
And think to yourself, you know what? I have this opportunity. I have a ticket that I can afford and a way to get into the United States. And I'm just going to sit here and die because no one has any treatment here. Like, as much as I don't think this is a nice thing to do, I sort of understand why that would be a temptation, which is why we need to make sure that this is something that gets treated appropriately in Liberia, because as much as you want to say, like, it's sort of morally questionable to do this sort of thing, like, the guy's trying to survive. Well, you can't stop a guy who's trying to survive, which is the ultimate, only imperative that you have as a human from getting on a plane and coming to the U.S. because he knows that he'll get better treatment here.
Yeah. Well, and that's what so many people have said. Like, who's to say that this, you know, doesn't become a trend? I mean, I think
this has always been the concern. It's not just that people won't realize they have Ebola when they leave places, but that
they will try.
This is a better place to get treated for Ebola, for sure. Like, 100%. Yeah. Liberia is not a good place to get treated for Ebola because everyone's dying there.
Yeah.
So, like, this is the kind, you know, if you have the means to get out of Liberia, like, that's always been a problem with conditions that affect mostly the developing world, is that people who can afford to leave, and then everyone else has to deal with the condition.
Yeah,
but, like, that's not, like, an unexpected turn of events. Like, if I were in his shoes, I can't say I would do something different if I wanted to survive, you know?
I think I saw one of the... I think it was Bobby Jindal, actually, this week said
A lot of people have had a lot of thoughts about this.
A lot of people have had a lot of thoughts. Some people are saying that we should not allow flights into the country from these these countries. Which, I mean, I don't
know. That's not a great plan. It's just not fair to people who have other things that are going on in their lives besides Ebola.
Well, and I think what you know, the head of the CDC, what I heard him say, and I think that everybody sort of just now agrees that this is the way to go, is that you really have to, you have to take care of it there, obviously.
Exactly. You have to make it possible for people to get good treatment there so that no one who thinks they have Ebola thinks their only option for survival is to get on a plane and come here.
Right, that's it. That's what you do. I mean, you can put in all the safeguards in the world that you want, but you, unless, you know, you can sort of, like, stop it where it started, then it's always going to be... you're always going to be running into these problems.
Exactly. This is an individual who did this. It's not like it's not the government who sent him over. You know, it's not something that we can really fight on, like, a diplomatic level with anything but aid.
Yeah.
And it's not like you can stop desperate people from coming places.
Right.
Desperate people always find a way to get to a place.
Right. Well, and the thing that I think that we also need to keep in mind, too, as we're panicking, is that, you know, this is obviously, like, a huge outbreak in West Africa that's going right now. But, you know, we have stopped Ebola outbreaks before.
Right. This is not the first Ebola outbreak in the world.
Not by curing them, but by doing the things that you can do to stop it further spreading. Now, obviously, like, you know, it could turn into, like, a huge, bigger disaster there because so many people have it, and it's sort of like, you know, we've had trouble getting it locked down now. But, I mean, like, you know, if one person comes into America, like, that's, you know, even if more people do, we're going to sort of, we don't have to worry about, like, you know, an Ebola, like, turning into World War Z around
and
here.
And the
like,
other issue, I mean, one of the things that I think everyone has pointed out is that because of the way this is spread,
right.
having better sanitary conditions makes a huge difference.
Well, right.
That's what they don't have in, you know, a lot of the developing world that makes them so, you know, that makes it so easy for these things to get out right. of control.
Yeah.
Like, this one guy probably came in contact with a bunch of people. Probably most of them had running water in their house and could wash their hands after they met him. For whatever reason, they washed their hands. You know, you wash your hands like a million times a day for no reason.
Yeah.
Like, probably most of them had, at some point, used Purell that day. Like, I mean, there's right. just, like, a million things that happened that made it possible for them to, like, come in contact with him and not get Ebola.
Right, yeah.
Whereas in Africa, who's to say that the right. the family that he came in contact with, you know, everyone he came in contact with on the way to the airport probably didn't have some sort of, like, clean water supply
yeah.
and, so, you know, like, all of the things that you need in order to, like,
right.
lock something like this down.
Yeah.
In any case, it is still confirming all of my worst fears. Because
yeah.
everyone is always like, oh, no, don't worry, it won't happen here.
I know.
And then some guy in freaking Texas, where all the worst things happen,
I know.
Shows up with Ebola.
God, hopefully we don't have to rely on Rick Perry to get this
well,
thing
I know.
Down,
I was like,
right?
please go to a state where they care about taxes. I mean, they have good hospitals in Houston, at least. So
I'm sure.
Hopefully
I'm
Dallas
sure
is up there.
Yeah.
But God forbid he had gone to somewhere in, like, Kansas. Like, who knows what could have happened? Anything. Probably would have just been sitting in front of the hospital all day waiting for
yeah, who knows?
Coughing on everyone or whatever. In any case, another terrible international
oh,
news.
Oh, boy, oh, boy.
ISIS is now just real close to Baghdad.
Aren't we supposed to be bombing them right now?
I'm so sick of ISIS. They're a pain in the butt.
Right?
They've had, like, a week-long offensive going on where they've taken a bunch of cities in Anbar, which is just west of Baghdad, I think, and they're starting to take over some of the military bases in that region. That's like a, you know, Abu Ghraib is over there. They mm-hmm. they suddenly have a presence in Abu Ghraib.
Oh, Abu Ghraib.
Abu Ghraib, fond memories.
Yeah.
But this is a Sunni province that is very suspicious of the Shia government. And
yep.
so they, you know, it's been pretty easy for them to get traction over there. So they're, Abu Ghraib is very close to Baghdad, and they're sort of like slowly expanding into the suburbs of Baghdad, which
right.
is bad news. A, because obviously Baghdad's capital and that's not what you want.
Right.
B, because it means that they're within striking distance of the airport in Baghdad.
Right,
which
they're
is
already
how
within
all of
artillery
the
range.
Diplomats and everyone else who's dealing with Baghdad
yeah.
get there.
Right.
And they're in artillery range. They are sort of in danger of being quite close to road range, just like
right.
the range in which they can take over the road that goes to the airport, and then
right.
that's a problem.
They don't yet. The Iraqi
no, they don't
government
have yet.
And the army still sort of has it, but they're...
But the
you
Iraqi
know,
government and army are some of the biggest hacks out there. I mean, the Iraqi
right.
army is a mess.
Nobody.
They were saying that they had taken over a convoy, and they were like, well, American convoys are usually like 35 to 55 vehicles or whatever, and they were like, nobody knows what the Iraqi convoy was, because people just like are dropping like flies over there, and they're just
right.
sort of wandering away.
Yeah.
So no one... It could have been a convoy of one truck by that point.
That's
like,
it.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
So in any case, this is troubling and problematic.
Yeah.
And they are in a suburb of Baghdad called Yusufiya, or I'm saying that wrong, but that's, you know,
yeah.
a thing.
Well.
And they are also pushing into Syrian Kurdish territory, and people are, they're sort of hoping that Turkey will intervene.
Turkey's
sort of been like,
of,
you know what, deal with your
of
shit.
Of no use.
Yeah.
yeah.
They're not trying to get involved in this bullshit.
But much like the other countries in the region there, if Turkey continues to decide to not get involved, then...
Turkey's got a problem.
Then Turkey's got a problem because, like, Turkey, it's going to... The problem is going to be in Turkey.
Yeah, and then they will have to deal with it because they will be inside of Turkey.
Right, and then they'll be like, damn, we should have...
Yeah. Well, but Turkey has this very complicated relationship with the Kurds anyway because
true.
Kurds are a pain in the butt to everyone. They're living in every country in the region. There's Kurds all over the place.
Yeah.
And so, and they kind of are like semi-autonomous. So like
right.
everyone, and they're crazy in their own way. They're sort of allies of us and other, you know, sort of quote unquote good guys in the area.
Right.
But they're also like really problematic and annoying, and they're heavily violent and like
yeah.
armed to the teeth and
yeah.
just like a bunch of crazies.
With our shit.
With our shit.
So it's like, use it.
Exactly. This is the kind of place where, you know, like, Kurdistan is, like, a kind of place where they're, like, firing bullets into the air to celebrate as well as to be angry. Like, they fire bullets on all occasions over
sure.
there. So, like, they're a complicated group to be allied with or not allied
right.
with. Which is, I think, why Turkey, who doesn't love their Kurds, I don't
right.
think is sort of like, nah, fuck you
not
guys.
Not trying to get involved, yeah.
You know, like, they're annoyed enough that they have Kurds in their own country, and they're like, we're not trying to
right.
deal with you Kurds in Syria. That said, they should be smarter than that. But maybe they are trying to practice a kind of patience that we don't have because they know something that we don't. Which is maybe that they are sick of dealing with this problem.
Right.
In any case, so we've got ISIS problems in the north, in the south, the east and west. It's just a mess over there. These guys are crazy.
Yeah.
They're fucking crazy.
They are. I think there was another beheading this week, too, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think there was.
Yeah.
It's so gross to behead people. Like, come on. Behead people. That's disgusting.
It is.
People are less gross with their heads on. Even murder is less gross when someone keeps their head. Like, just don't. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
Even, like, it makes me think, because we finally watched The Mysteries of Laura.
Oh, my God.
The other night. It's as bad as promised. It is. It is bad.
It was really, really bad.
Really bad. But there is a point in it where she shoots a guy's ear off.
Oh, yeah.
And even with the terrible special effects that they had in that show, and just the general ludicrousness of the entire premise and acting and script and every other part of it, it was still gross to see a guy have his ear partially blown off.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
And that's because it's on his head.
Right.
Leave your people's head heads alone. Intact. Your head should be attached. It should be fully attached and intact. Attached. Exactly.
Right, exactly, yeah.
It should be all of those things.
Oh, man, that's
In any case, it was so bad. We finally figured out what the Hong Kong protests were about. We were super vague about it last week.
We just told you that there was like a large protest.
Right, we knew that they were pro-democracy protests, but we couldn't figure out what the promise was that China made that they had reneged on. We knew that they had promised a full democracy and that they were going to sort of like, you know, give, you know, that they were going to roll that out in 2017 or whatever. Yeah. Here's what happened. And I knew that there had been some change in the 90s to Hong Kong status, and I was right because I'm a genius. But I didn't know what it was because I don't care that much. After 150 years of British rule, Hong Kong was returned to China in 1997. But it's been operating sort of semi-autonomously under a system that is known as one country, two systems. It's real clever.
Yeah.
So it's not part of the communist rule that envelops the rest of China. It is sort of its own deal, which is, it's like a major capitalist economy. So yeah, like you would think that. In any case, the promise that Beijing made to them, which was that in 2017, they would be allowed to elect their own leader because Beijing had been sort of appointing people to deal with Hong Kong. And so everyone in Hong Kong was super excited about this because they're basically British people and they like want
to
vote.
I love that they were going to call them the chief executive too.
Right, like it was a business, like the business of Hong Kong. But in any case, so in 2017, they were supposed to have these elections and they were just going to be sort of like, until then, dealing with someone who Hong Kong appointed.
Right.
I mean, to Beijing appointed.
Yeah.
Then earlier this summer, China decided that they still were going to have a committee that was basically going to select the candidates for the people of Hong Kong. So it wasn't going to be a true democracy.
Right.
It was going to be a communist-style democracy where the party gives you people to vote for, and then you vote for the people they tell you to, and then you've not voted for anything of any importance.
Right.
So that's why the protests are going on. Recently, because they've been real out of hand, Beijing gave them an ultimatum because they're trying to get, you know, they've been protesting in the Central District of Hong Kong, and so they've been really, you know, interrupting a lot of business and other people trying to go to work.
If you haven't seen the pictures are crazy. There was also this week that got released. I don't know if you saw it, but there was that drone video. Did you see this?
No.
A lot of people were posting it on Facebook. There was like a drone video that basically like flew through and over like basically the entire city.
That's crazy.
And it was like, it's nuts. Like, yeah, you should watch it.
The pictures look really crazy, amazing. And it's a lot of it. It's the first protest like this that's really made use of Instagram. So there's a lot more. It's not like Twitter where you sort of like just see periodic little updates. It's all like visual interaction, which is kind of cool looking.
Yeah.
And they've been sort of, adopting a lot of, other protest language.
Right.
You know, well, the Michael Brown protest. I mean, there's been a lot of hands up, don't shoot because the police have gotten out of hand.
Yep.
So it's sort of exciting looking and kind of cool. But so in any case, they were told that Beijing basically gave them an ultimatum and said that they had to clear the streets by Monday because they were ready for business to resume.
Right.
And the protesters have, on Saturday, they had huge protests that they were sort of like a big fuck you to Beijing.
Yeah.
And then Sunday, today, they have not cleared out, but some of the protesters have started clearing out the blockades of various, you know, building entrances and subway exits and all the things that they have been blockading. So it looks like some of the protesters will be clearing out, but not all of them. And this is like, it's interesting. This is a protest that's basically being led by this 17-year-old boy. The biggest celebrity in this protest is this 17-year-old who's kind of organizing the whole thing. He's really smart. He's really well-spoken on it. And it's sort of, I mean, one thing that's cool about Hong Kong doing this is, like, it's sort of this bilingual place, so, like, everyone can sort of communicate, like, you can communicate to everyone, because mm-hmm. they speak English, they speak Chinese, right. they're able to sort of, like, reach a huge stage with their message because of that. Yeah. And so because of that, everyone sort of understands what's going on in a way that I don't think they would if, like, we were, like, just like last week when we were like, oh, protests going on in Hong Kong, all right, I know. Whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a very kind of, like, exciting
yeah.
thing. You know, Brent and I love protests, so that's
yeah.
part the best. Of why we're so excited here.
Yeah.
I guess if you don't love protests, this wouldn't be very exciting to you at all. This would be a terrible month for you.
Yeah.
But it is sort of, this is why I always say that, that Occupy, despite not really accomplishing any specific aims, just, like, changed yeah, the world.
Yeah, totally.
And I mean, more than that, the Arab Spring, I think, changed the world. Yeah. But Occupy was sort of, like, an outgrowth of that it applied it internationally
yeah.
and gave everyone, like, the language and the means, you know, the tools to, like, right. do something like this for whatever they needed.
Yeah.
But this is what you can do when you have the language and tools of Occupy and you have figured out how to harness social media. And they're using a type yeah. of text messaging program. Yeah. I'm knocking the mic a lot because I'm excited about it. They're using some sort of text messaging program that relies on local networks so that if the internet or the phone systems get shut down to get them to stop talking to each other,
yeah.
they're, like, talking on some, like, Bluetooth chat thing or something.
Oh,
so
weird.
They're the way that they're organizing it, because in China, they're just, like, shutting random shit down all the time. Like,
yeah.
they decide you can't have Twitter, it's over. You can't have Twitter anymore.
Yeah.
But so they've been sort of one step ahead of it because they're using sort of, like, a phone-to-phone thing that kind of takes the threat that the service will disappear yeah. out of the equation. So it's cool.
Nice.
It's all very cool. And in
more Asian news.
More Asian news.
Yeah.
This is the awesome. Greatest story that happened all week.
Yeah.
So basically, maybe you've heard, there's been a lot of speculation about where Kim Jong-un is right now.
Right. He's gone dark.
He's been participating in an increasingly few number of public events in North Korea in the last few months.
For like a month, right?
Yeah, the last event that he was seen in was in like September 4th or something.
Yeah.
But even like in July and August, he had slowly been pulling back.
Mm-hmm.
Pyongyang officials are saying he's suffering from, quote, discomfort.
Right. Hadn't he been seen with a limp too, hadn't
yeah.
he?
Like the last time that he was in public, he'd gained a lot of weight.
Yeah.
So he was getting fat.
Yep.
And he had like a mysterious limp that no one understood.
Right.
Which was the limp of a crazy person, not the limp of an injured person.
Probably.
In any case, so he's been MIA for a while now.
Yeah.
And everyone is having a lot of fun speculating as to where he could possibly have gone.
Yeah.
But while he's been gone, three top-ranking North Korean officials decided this weekend to just a quick visit to South Korea.
They're just doing it without him.
Well, there's a lot of speculation by a lot of people who don't
maybe
know.
Maybe they've been doing it without him for a while.
That either they've maybe, or that there's some sort of power struggle going on right. where the old guard is sort of like, fuck this kid, and they're just
right.
kind of like walking all over him.
Well, because he really was a kid when he took power. I mean,
he's
still young.
Right
he's
now.
Still young, but I mean,
he's
he was, yeah.
And a lot of people have said, you know, part of the kind of ideology of North Korea is that he's sort of like a god.
A god, right.
So like, he's not necessarily going to be overthrown.
Or is at least appointed by God, if nothing
right.
else. Yeah.
He's not going to be overthrown, like, you know, most likely, but there is sort of a power struggle going on to kind of like walk all over him, basically.
Right.
Because these other guys, these top officials, are much more experienced than he is and much older
right.
than he is and just sort of...
They know how to play the game.
Probably like really fucking savvy about what to do, whereas
right.
he's just kind of like some dumb kid who's
yeah,
ordering hits on people. Like,
yeah.
he doesn't know what he's doing. But so... In any case, the number two and number three guy in North Korea and another guy who's also very high up decided to pay a last minute visit to South Korea.
Yeah.
Because they had some high level meetings in February, which was the first mm-hmm. time that had happened in a long time.
Weren't they going to the like Asian Games?
Yeah.
Or the Korean
so there was
going to
be the closing ceremonies for the Asian Games.
Right.
And so they basically popped down for those. And
sure.
while they were there, they met with the Prime Minister of South Korea and the National Security Chief. And
yeah.
so they. Had these meetings where they've basically been trying to kind of come up with a way to stop being so mean to each other. Like,
right.
ultimately, that's all this
that's
is.
That's it. Like, they're not,
there's not
trying
they're
to...
They're not trying to work anything out
no.
other than just, like...
Just, like, to tamp down the rhetoric
yeah,
a little bit.
Exactly. It's all sort of, like, let's try not to say mean things about each other as much anymore.
Right.
Like, no... And, like, let's stop doing threatening military exercises on the border, which... Because
yeah.
the U.S. and South Korea... have been doing some increasingly kind of, like, threatening military maneuvering
oh,
on
yes,
the border,
right,
which is
yeah.
a favorite of North Koreans, too.
Yeah.
Like, North Korea loves to do a threatening military
right.
maneuver.
And South Korea has been doing maneuvers with America.
Yeah, we've been...
And so North Korea has been terrified.
We are helping them protect that border. If you go down to the border, which I have not been to, obviously, but I've watched a lot of documentaries about it.
Yeah, we saw that.
Yeah, it is American military that are protecting the border there.
Standing and staring across
the border. Standing and staring at the North Koreans who are standing and... That's all... That's, yeah.
There's a lot of staring.
And sometimes they make a call that no one picks up to each other.
Right.
You know, there's the guy... Sometimes the phone rings and then they pick it up and no one's there, or they make a phone call and no one picks up.
Yeah.
Like, they basically just, they're playing phone tag and staring at each other just all day long, every day.
Uh-huh.
So this was an exciting thing that they were up to.
Yeah.
In any case, after the February talks, they had sort of decided they were going to try to do this
again.
And then, and they, you know, South Korea invited North Korea to come back, and then North Korea never responded. And then they just popped over on Saturday.
Because nobody's answering that damn phone.
No, no one has the right phone number, it sounds like. Don't call the guys at the border. They
don't know.
They're not picking up.
They're not. Well, they're too busy staring.
Yeah, they have other responsibilities. Because if they stepped away from their response, you know, from their
who's to
staring
stare?
Post, then there's no one to stare, and then someone could just walk right over the border.
That's no.
It's just a land border with people staring at each other.
Yeah, that's it.
That's all that's going
and
on.
And fake
then.
Buildings.
And fake buildings. Yeah. Oh yeah, there's fake buildings.
Uh-huh.
A lot of fake buildings going on the North Korea side.
Yeah.
To make it look like the lush, wonderful.
Right. They're just facades. It's like Hollywood fake buildings
mm-hmm.
on that side. God, so I love this.
They're everything.
They're doing it all right
they
by
are
doing
everything.
It wrong.
Yeah. They're just. So the guys who went over, one is the vice marshal of the Korean People's Army.
Mm-hmm.
One is a top politician who deals with the South, you know, one of the top dealings negotiator type people with the South. That's not a title, but he's a guy who deals with the South. One, interestingly, is the former head of the military who was replaced in May, and people thought he had fallen out of favor with Kim Jong-un, but apparently he's still sort of influential because he's just like around. And he's also just like the secretary of every board of what, you know, communists love to have, weird committees. He's, like, on every committee that matters.
I got it. But it's interesting, though, that everyone thought that he had fallen out of favor. Like, it sort of makes you wonder, like, I mean, there's a lot of speculation of what's going on over there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, this seems...
Maybe he's engineering
it. I mean, everything over there is weird, obviously.
Yeah.
But this is sort of, like, you know...
Super weird.
Super weird to the point of, like, are they sort of, like... going behind Kim Jong-un's back? Are they doing things
like... Well, that's what I feel like could be very exciting that's happening over there.
I know, exactly. Because, like, it's all very bizarre. Like,
yeah.
I mean...
Well, maybe they've just sort of been like, you know what? Enough of this nonsense.
Right.
If we want to be crazy up here, we can do that. But they have to stop... We have to stop, like, antagonizing everyone with annoyance.
Right.
Like, they will otherwise just let us be crazy up here.
Yeah, exactly.
They've made their point now. They can be crazy up there to their heart's content.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
oh gosh,
the Secret Service has been really having a bad run of it.
Ooh, personal story time.
And I have a personal story. So I am less surprised than most to hear that the Secret Service is having some issues. Because I had this weird run-in with the Secret Service back when Hillary Clinton was still a senator in New York State.
Yeah.
I was at this press conference that dealt with the 9/11 health bill. And so I was going to speak after her at this press conference.
Yeah.
And so
she was opening for you, is what you're saying.
Hillary Clinton opened for me.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's like, you know, her, like Chuck Schumer, like all those people were there.
Yeah.
They spoke.
Right.
And then I was standing in the background for when the cameras left so I could speak to whoever was still gathered.
Right.
So I'm standing sort of in, you know, at press conferences, you have like the crowd behind you so that you look like you have a lot of support.
Right,
for
of course.
Things. Uh-huh. So I'm standing in the crowd kind of behind her, like directly behind her because I'm supposed to come on next.
Yeah.
And one of her aides comes up to me and goes, okay, stay where you are. And I was like, what's happening? Why? And she was like, there's a crazy lady behind you, and we don't want her to be standing next to the senator. And I was like, isn't there someone else who could deal with this situation? And she was like, no, don't worry about it. There's two Secret Service guys right here.
Right.
But by right here, she meant way back off stage, like nowhere near where I was standing. So basically, while the Secret Service stood by idly, I was asked to personally body block a crazy person so that they couldn't contact
Hillary
Clinton.
You were the human shield.
I was a human shield for Hillary Clinton. That's what the Secret Service has been up to in the past.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm not surprised to hear that they're not doing much protecting of the president either.
No. So, this week you may have heard that Julia Pearson, who's the director of the Secret Service, she resigned on Wednesday because we talked last week about the guy who jumped the White House fence and then got into there. Well, we found out this week, the Washington Post has been, like, breaking a lot of news on this.
Yeah.
And they, he actually basically got through the entire White House.
Yeah, he ran the way through.
Almost to, like,
the private residence
quarters of, like, the first family.
Yeah.
And he was actually stopped by an off-duty guard who just happened to be there. So, like, basically, like, all the people who were, like, technically working, like, were just
letting failed to stop this man.
Right.
A man who happened to be in the hallway
is
who stopped him.
Right. After running through the entire White House lawn.
Right.
So, once we heard about that, then we were sort of, you know, reminded about all of the other fuck-ups that they've had recently.
Right. They're having issues with hookers, they're up to a lot.
Right, and then some news stories started to break, because, like, I think people sort of were like, wait a minute, what else is going wrong there?
Yeah.
So, yes, there was the prostitution scandal, there was, and granted that wasn't, Julia Pearson actually took over for the previous director, because he was the one who was overseeing the prostitution scandal.
Right.
So we're up on our third one now,
yeah.
Starting, you know, they've named an interim guy. But anyway, so, but there was also, like, something happened recently where the president...
It was an armed criminal.
Right, at the CDC, I think.
Yeah.
He was, like, had gone there, and, like, yes, they let him... they let some guy...
It was, like, a contractor.
Right.
Who had a criminal record.
But he was armed.
Got on the elevator with the president, and they were like, cool, here's a guy on the elevator.
Yeah, just this guy. Come on up.
Yeah.
We'll hold the door for you.
Exactly.
So, that one is... That's not great. Also, there was the whole...
The bullet struck the White House, and the Secret Service was like, nah, backfiring construction vehicle.
Right, they didn't think it was bullets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they should know the sound of bullets.
Right.
I think of this especially because the students at Columbine knew how to recognize automatic and semi-automatic weapon fire as distinct things. I couldn't tell you still to this day what those sound like.
Yeah.
And they were able to do that. It makes me feel like the Secret Service should be able to know the difference between cars backfiring and bullets.
Right. And there was the issue at Mandela's funeral, remember, where you had the guy who had maybe murdered something fake signing right next to him? Like, that was, you know. So they're not doing a real bang-up job over there. So she sort of probably had to resign.
Yeah.
They've named an interim guy.
Yeah, who came from the private sector.
Right, he came from the private sector, but he used to be in the Secret Service, and he was actually on the president's private detail, so the Obamas sort of named him that because they feel
very comfortable with him.
A lot of people were sort of thinking that he may end up staying on the job.
Right.
But there are a lot of people who are sort of like, you know, there's been enough, like, systemic failure within the Secret Service recently, which it seems like is accurate, that, like, maybe they need to have somebody who they're not promoting through the ranks of the Secret Service to, like,
come and figure out what's going on.
This. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I can vouch for the fact that the Secret Service, in my experience, has not been all that secretive or service oriented.
Right. They're supposed to be the best of the best.
Right.
You know, I mean, like,
that's what you hope.
Yeah.
That's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
In a Secret Service agent, in the person whose job it is to protect the president and the first family.
Yeah.
You don't want the mediocre-ist of the batch.
No, you don't.
In any case, good news.
Oh, yeah.
Jobs numbers.
I know, your favorite. I always pull these, and Lila's always like, oh,
good. I know, I pulled the story this week, and then I was like, I'm going to make Brent read it. I'm not interested in this at all.
Well, this, usually we just sort of, like, gloss over them, because everybody always talks about them, but they're oftentimes just sort of, like...
Fake.
They're always fake, but they're also oftentimes just sort of, like...
Mean nothing.
Don't... have anything, they don't, you're right,
have no
exactly.
value.
They have no value.
They're like, oh, we added a medium amount of jobs and then nothing much happened.
This time they sort of have a little bit of value because everybody was sort of really spiraling out of control, that the unemployment rate is now 5.9%, which is the first time it's been below 6% since, like, I think it was June or July of 2008. So basically, like, right when Obama took office, when the economy was sort of, like, hemorrhaging hundreds of thousands of jobs every month.
Yeah.
So the economy added 248,000 jobs in September, which was way more than they thought it was going to. And they also, way upgraded the jobs numbers from, like, the last 2 months, which is, like, further proof that, like, you know, because every month we tell you that they're fake. But they, like, for the last 2 months, they added, like, almost 69,000 jobs to, like, the previous 2 months.
Right.
Like, that's a lot. Like, I mean, so we're just, they're all shots in the dark. I mean, it was a high shot in the dark this month.
Right.
So that's good. We can all celebrate that
until next month we find out
that they overestimated it by 70,000.
Right.
And then the unemployment rate's 6.1%.
Right.
So, but I think the other thing that, like, a lot of people have been talking about, and, like, I think people on the left and right have been talking about this because I think everybody sees it differently. But, you know, there are so many people think the country is sort of, like, still in the wrong direction, going in the wrong direction, even though the economy seems to be
improving,
to
at least
be doing better, like, in a lot of different areas, not just job growth. I mean, like, the housing market and, like, you know, various other things, like car buying and, you know.
Right. People are back to their...
All of those things are getting better. So why...
Doing their damnedest.
So why does everybody sort of, like, personally think that the economy is doing so crappy?
I have an answer.
You have an answer. The answer that most people are giving is because that wages have been stagnant. Basically, almost the entire time that he's been in office. And really, sort of, like, for the last 20 years, they right. haven't been growing that much.
Well, and that's what my point is sort of related to, but
right.
more larger. But my point is larger than that, because as we know, I don't believe in the economy. But this is why I don't believe in the economy. Because what you have here is a lot of fake numbers that fail to show you that wealth is being added to the wealthiest wealth.
Right.
And they don't notice the money. Well, wealthy people don't know what to do. They have enough money, so they're not like, oh, thank God, I can finally buy those shoes that I hadn't been buying before. Right. Because they already could buy the shoes. They can have everything that they want. They can live comfortably and more than comfortably without any extra wealth. So when they get extra wealth, it means nothing.
Right.
When you have an economy where wages have been stagnant for like two decades, and you know these minor changes in the economy don't have any sort of real consequence for regular people. You know, people lose their jobs in a bad economy, and that sucks. But like, frankly, when those people can't regain adequately paying jobs, the fact that there are jobs for them is less impressive
they're low-paying jobs.
Low-paying jobs. And these are often the jobs that we find are being added in these situations. Right. You can add 250,000 jobs to an economy, but if all of them are crappy jobs, that doesn't make a regular right. person think, God, opportunities are everywhere. It makes them think, like, now I'm a person and the only job I could get was in this shitty, you know, fucking Walmart. Like, it doesn't make you feel like opportunities are out there.
Well, right. Well, and that's the thing. And I think that so many people have, you know, we've talked a lot about sort of like even just within the Democratic Party, what are the, you know, there's sort of like two schools of thought about like what we need to do with the economy. There's the sort of like, you know, we need to grow the middle class. And then there are the people who sort of like think that we need to focus on the fact that there's all this income inequality. And I think that the more numbers that we get like this, I think just sort of like proof that you really have to deal with income inequality. Yeah. Because
it means nothing if the economy is doing well, and income inequality makes it meaningless to 95% of the country.
A recovery like this, where all the wealth is going to the top 1% and the, you know, other 99% can't afford to feed themselves, even if they have jobs that aren't paying them. Like, that's not a recovery that's sustainable. No. Like, I mean, that just,
means as little as the bad economy point. For most people.
Yeah.
For voters. Yeah. For people that vote. Well, this is something actually that I've often had an issue with the way that the Democratic Party has approached the economic policy, because there is a really strong desire to sort of talk as if your focus is on the middle class in the Democratic Party. And a lot of the time they see that their base is the middle class. And so
that's because everybody thinks that they're in it to be in it. So it's
and that's the thing that they always say is like, everyone thinks they're middle class. So we talk about growing the middle class, you know, blah, you know, we can talk about, you know, we can reach more people that way.
Right.
I have always thought that was sort of a crock of shit, because once, you know, especially in the post-Occupy years, because everyone is now aware that they're not middle class, and we talk about it a lot more openly, but also I think that they think that talking about income inequality makes them sound like radicals, and I don't think it's that radical of an idea.
Well, I don't either.
Especially when everyone knows how much wealth is concentrated in the top.
Right.
So, like, they, I think, more than thinking that everyone thinks they're middle class, because that's a patronizing way of looking at it, you know?
Right.
People who are poor don't think they're middle class. They think they're fucking poor because they are. Like, you don't get those people to feel like you are representing their interests by talking about middle class issues.
No.
Because when they think middle class in an economy like this, they think of upper middle class white people.
Right.
They don't think of themselves.
Absolutely.
And especially, it's not like we're in a factory unionized economy at this point. People who had blue collar jobs thought they were middle class. Those jobs don't really exist anymore.
Right.
So like, you can't talk to people like they all think they're middle class. They know they're not middle class.
Right.
And that's always been a very patronizing and totally ineffective thing.
Agree.
And it's a thing that allows them to not do anything. Because helping the middle class only ends up helping the wealthy. Because the middle class isn't really a thing that exists that much anymore. There isn't that much of a middle class, you know?
Yep.
And the middle class is losing wealth. They're not gaining wealth. So they feel like their hold on things is slipping anyway.
Yep.
So they are more likely to sort of feel like income inequality is the biggest issue, and that their growing poverty is the biggest issue, and they're more likely to sympathize with the poor than they are with the top 1%.
I totally agree. That's why I think focusing on income inequality is the way to go.
Exactly. No, and
I mean, it's not only the way to go.
No,
it's
but
it's the right thing to do. That's what you have to do.
But I mean, I think that they have often acted like that is a radical thing to do. And
it's because they're scared of the whole sort of like,
they're scared of the 1% backlash.
The 1% backlash and the Republicans telling them that they're waging class warfare.
Yeah, exactly. I think they should just be like, fuck it, we're waging class warfare.
Yeah,
The 1% should give up some of their hold on the economy. I think people would be like, we love it.
Yeah.
Continue doing that.
Yeah. Well, the thing about the 1% is there's only 1% of them.
Exactly. So screw them.
Yeah, exactly.
They hold like 90% of the wealth, but there's it's only 1% of them.
Yeah.
No, I think that hopefully, you know, in the last few years, we've sort of learned a lesson about what you can and can't say about the economy, because I think that's one thing also that Occupy really changed, is that income inequality is something that everyone is very aware of at this point. We all now admit that it's happening. It used to be that Americans were sort of like, actually did think that they were all middle class, even though their slip on it was, you know, their hold on it was slipping. Now, I don't think that that's really the case at
all. I agree.
I think it's smarter to not.
Yep.
Anyway, I get nuts when economics people are
why does everybody think the country's going
we're doing so well? It's like, if the economy, but that's where we go back to not believing the economy. If you say the economy is good and it means nothing to
anyone,
most people, then the economy is not good. It's
not
a thing. It's a set of numbers you made up that has no reflection on like what's actually happening to people.
Yep.
So, that's in any case.
Yeah.
The economy's fake. Sorry, Kevin.
Right.
In any case, here's some updates about what's going on in the Senate races.
Yeah, we've been doing this sort of almost on a weekly basis.
Well, this is the most exciting thing that's happening.
Right, exactly. Right now. And last week, it was fairly bleak. I mean, it still wasn't great. But, I mean, we finally got some new NBC poll numbers that they released this morning to much fanfare on Meet the Press.
Exactly. You can hear the dog barking.
They have a new set on Meet the Press, by the way, too, which is very sort of weird looking. There's like a little side desk where he does like interviews that have and it's very sort of like homey and folksy. There's like newspapers lying around and sort of like, it's kind of weird looking. And there's also like, on the desk, like where the panel is sitting. And then also there's like all sorts of like memorabilia on the walls and stuff, like in like shadow boxes with like different, and there's
isn't Meet the Press supposed to just be like in a dark mystery space at a table?
And there's like a football helmet on the wall, and
you don't need that.
Very weird.
Yeah,
anyway.
I don't like it.
Regardless, they had new poll numbers. And Chuck Todd loves some good poll numbers.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they, from three states that are sort of like hotly contested. First off, Kansas, which we've talked a lot about because it's just so fascinating.
Yeah.
Also, in regards to Kansas, there was some good news this week, I guess, for the Democrats, because they, there was that whole court case about like whether the Democrats were going to have to field a candidate.
Right.
And they don't.
They don't. So
they
we're
do
just
not, they
with
do
the
not
independent.
Have to, so now the only two people that are going to be on that.
Pat Roberts.
Right. Exactly. So there's this guy, Greg Orman, who is the independent there, who has said that he will caucus with whoever wins. So it's
a lovely guy.
I know, right? So it's not necessarily great for the Democrats if we lose, because then it's just sort of adding another Republican.
But it would be not a pickup.
Right. It's a net loss for the Republicans, because that's
Pat Roberts'
seat. And Greg Orman is crushing Pat Roberts. He's
crushing
like,
him.
He's
like 10 points.
Yeah, 10 points. It's like not even close. So the Republicans in that state right now, for the reasons that we've talked about on this podcast, because it's falling apart, basically.
Yeah.
The Tea Partiers got in and they cut all the taxes, and
then there was no money.
Now they're underwater and they're all left scratching their heads. So anyway, That would be good for the Democrats, just in the sense that, like, a loss for the Republicans.
In that it's bad for the Republicans.
Right, exactly. So, and also in that same poll, Sam Brownback is in a basically tie.
Yeah,
and he's running against an actual Democrat.
Right.
There. And
well, Brownback deserves to be strung up for what he did to the economy there. I mean, among many other things. But, I mean, that's simple math. Skills should be a requirement if you're going to be the governor of a place.
Yeah, I know.
And he seems to be lacking them. He seems to have not understood.
So many Republicans do.
I know. Like, if you don't have taxes, then there's no money. Like, that's just an obvious thing that we can't. I can't stress enough how true that is.
I know.
In any case, we also have updates from Iowa.
Yes, where last week we brought you
a very depressing poll.
Depressing poll where Joni Ernst was ahead by 6%.
Right.
And now in their poll, she's only ahead by 2%, which was outside of the margin of error of like 3.5% or something like that. So that is getting closer, and for some reasons that we'll get to in a little bit, I think is only going to get closer.
Yeah.
And like, I think ultimately, if you're Bruce Braley, the thing to do is to maybe just
hang out.
Just
say nothing.
Ride it out.
Say not a
thing. You've only got a month and a half left, and if everybody wants
to catch up on some television,
right? Exactly.
Shake some hands.
Right. Exactly.
Don't say a word to the people whose hands you're shaking. Look like a friendly guy.
That's right. That's what you do.
Yeah.
Because Joni Ernst is a wing nut.
Yeah. She's the kind of person that the more you let her talk, the crazier it'll sound.
Yeah. Exactly. And so we'll get to that in a second. But quickly, the other poll is in North Carolina. Kay Hagan, who is the Democratic incumbent there,
has
is
pulled ahead outside of the margin of error.
Right, exactly.
To her challenger.
Right.
So that's good news, because she that was looking like a bad scene over there.
It really was.
I mean, it was a bad scene anyway. Kay Hagan's no hero to people.
No, but, she's really not.
But it was going to be a really bad scene when she wasn't even there.
Yeah. The other thing that's interesting in both Kansas and in North Carolina is that there are libertarians in both of those races, and they're not going to win, obviously, but they're polling at 5% and in Kansas and 7% in North Carolina, and that is definitely enough in a close race, and they're they're right-leaning. I mean, they're sort of like the, you know, the
Rand Paul libertarians.
Libertarians, yeah, exactly. I mean, all of them are sort of nutty, but, you know, you can sometimes...
It's not possible to be an unnutty libertarian.
You can get a left-leaning libertarian. Like, those people sometimes exist.
Yeah.
These two are not that.
No.
So those 5% and 7% would be seen as sort of siphoning votes from
I wonder how that will work, though, in Kansas, where they have sort of like a nutbag, you know, rando.
Well, that's true.
I definitely see that benefiting the North Carolina race. Kansas is like, I don't understand what's going on.
Who knows
there right
what's
now.
Going on there?
It's like a real. This is like the dream race, though. They get to choose between a far right and like a middle medium.
Right.
Whoever wins, I'll go with them kind of guy.
They're trying really hard to tie that guy to Obama.
Hopefully,
Greg Orman.
I mean,
I don't know
how
they're doing that, but that's their master plan.
That's a terrible master plan.
Yeah. But anyway, so
back to Iowa.
Back to Iowa. Yes, Mitt Romney is there.
Right.
Not running
for
president.
He's there with Joni Ernst, which is why this man should not be allowed to run for president.
It's a questionable choice. And
of all the people.
What's even more questionable is he campaigned for her before she won that primary.
Yeah.
Back when she was saying
like,
even crazier things. No, I don't think so.
Like, who? Because he's not from Iowa. It's not like he has some sort of tie to Iowa that makes him like a uniquely special guy in the Iowa
races. No, he's
not
loved there. He's ran for president twice in Iowa, and he has not won either time.
He's just a guy who happens to be available to go to Iowa at the moment.
Yeah.
He's not like somebody who has some sort of special connection to Joni Ernst. So it's so curious that he's doing this. I mean, it's an obvious attempt to sort of test the waters for his next presidential run that he keeps talking about or not talking about. But this is just a terrible plan that he's hatched.
Yeah.
This is like the
Don't
Sarah Palin of terrible
her.
Plans. Don't be seen
it.
With her.
No, exactly. So, and that's the thing. So, sort of, you know, they've now had their first debate. It seems as though she's pulling ahead, or it's at least close. This is obviously a hotly contested race in a sort of battleground state that's going to have a huge impact on who keeps the Senate. And now that that has sort of like become known, like we're sort of starting to learn things about her that we're paying attention. More people are paying attention. There's like national people paying attention who are like deciding that it's a good thing that we maybe actually see what she thinks before we decide that we're going to vote
and
for her.
And she is someone that was going to benefit from the anonymity of running in Iowa.
Correct.
Very much.
Right, exactly.
Because
people have long compared her to sort of like A, Sarah Palin, and B, Todd Akin. Because, you know, she hasn't sort of like had like a as big a public like inflammatory statement as Todd Akin, but like
She's up to some crazy shenanigans and conspiracy theories.
She's a Tea Party, like, right-wing lunatic. And this week, we learned somebody dug up some... because she's in the state legislature right now. And she filled out some thing... Candidate survey in for the Iowa State Legislative Candidate Survey in 2012. And she answered yes to the following question. Will you support legislation to nullify Obamacare and authorize state and local law enforcement to arrest federal officials attempting to implement the unconstitutional healthcare scheme known as Obamacare?
First of all, that was in the survey.
Right.
That is a question that got asked.
Who thinks to ask that question? But second off, she said yes
to
arresting people.
Arresting federal officials who are
going to
implement Obamacare. Oh my God.
So that, like, was getting all of the, like, that was like all the news in Iowa this week was like,
first
about
of all,
this.
I have some thoughts. One being, if you are a candidate who has asked that question, do not answer it.
No.
You don't win.
I mean,
I could answer that I could answer no to that and feel great about myself.
Right, feel great about it.
But if your answer is yes, do not answer it.
Right, exactly.
Don't.
Or if your answer is yes, then say, don't ask me this.
Right.
What is this question?
Exactly.
Is another appropriate answer.
Yeah, no, that's another good one.
Just respond with your own question.
Could either be no or another question, but don't answer yes to this. No. Don't be a person who was on the record as having answered yes to this question.
Right.
That is crazy.
Right. So it got me thinking, and I know it's got a lot of other people thinking, because, like, we have often said that she's too crazy, but we haven't really given any specific instances as to why she is too crazy. So we're going to.
Yeah.
Because
we've certainly never gotten the chance to list them all at once. No. And that's what our plan is right now.
Right. Because once you really list all of these things, this is another... here's more advice for you, Bruce Braley.
Yeah.
Write these things all down and put them in a mailer.
That's right. Just mail that shit everywhere.
Send them in an email and put them in a TV ad. That's it.
That's it. You don't talk about yourself. No one wants to know about you. You're terrible.
No, we don't care that you tried to sue your neighbors because they had too many chickens or whatever.
Whatever that you ridiculous Iowa problem you had.
Chuck Grassley because he was a farmer. Like, we don't just... That's all.
Keep your mouth shut.
That's all.
Don't say any more words.
Right.
Put this shit in a mailer and get that to your people.
Right. Here's the mailer. She supported... She has stated her support for a totally, like, draconian personhood amendment.
Obviously.
Basically, like, if you're a zygote, then you're a person.
Right.
So, that's the most sane thing from the list that we're gonna get
to. Right, that's fairly middle of the road for someone like her. Yeah.
She, said that, Obama impeachment should be totally on the table.
Obviously.
Yep. But here's where it gets good.
Yeah.
Because we get some fringe theories in here, actually.
That's what you want.
She often peddles this fringe conspiracy that's called, Agenda 21. And it's that the UN could forcibly evict Iowa farmers from their property and control which cities they live in and restrict people's travel. Which is like...
You know the UN up to that.
Yeah.
In Iowa, especially.
Yeah,
they care a lot about where Iowa farmers are living.
Trying to make sure farmers can't farm.
Like...
And that they all live in big cities, which there aren't any of.
Right. They all live in the giant sprawling metropolis of... Cedar Rapids. That's the
thing. And she's talked about this multiple times. Like, this isn't just something she sort of, like, accidentally said. Like, she thinks this.
She thinks this.
Yeah.
She's worried about the UN's influence on where Iowa citizens can and can't live.
And she has also complained about the mere existence of a federal minimum wage.
Right. Not that it's too high. Just that that we have one.
Right. Doesn't like that exists. Here's another fringy one. This is pretty good. She supports nullification, which is this theory that was, like, promoted first in the 19th century after the Civil War by Southerners. And it's basically the idea that states can pick and choose which federal laws they're going to follow. They can the state can nullify, a federal law if they don't like it. Which is, you can't do, actually.
You can't do that and have a country.
No.
You can do that and have an independent country of your own. Right. Iowa, the country, can do that.
Yes.
Iowa, the state, like, why bother having a federal government then? What is the point of the federal government?
Yeah.
We're not a country at that point. And here's the thing. Iowa loses out in this situation.
They really do.
California, we can just go on being ourselves.
We're fine.
We don't care. We're like the world's seventh largest economy or something. Like, we're not sorry. You know, Texas, probably just do whatever they feel like. Mm-hmm. New York State will be fine. You know who won't be fine? Iowa. That's who won't be fine.
Yeah.
They're landlocked, so how are they going to get their goods to market?
Yeah.
You know, they have all this corn and pork that they're trying to sell us all, but, like, how are they going to get it to us with just a bunch of landlocked nonsense going on in their state? They can't.
Yeah.
They are the people that need us to not do nullification. Because when California and New York and Texas and, like, Florida decide on nullification, Iowa's fucked.
They really are.
Especially, well, all of the states that receive federal aid are fucked, basically. Because that's another thing. You can't be getting New York and California tax dollars and then be like, but we're not going to follow your laws.
Right, yeah.
Anyway.
And also, in the final one on the list, which is just sort of like
which
the real kicker.
The icing
probably
on the cake.
Probably due to too much Fox News watching.
Yes.
She told the Des Moines Register editorial board that we did find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
She apparently got news that we did not about
that.
That
the rest of the world.
That the rest of the world was unfamiliar with. Yeah, she has, I guess, her own irrefutable proof that we found weapons of mass destruction there.
Yeah.
I would love to see it.
I'm so
curious.
She's not only a conspiracy theorist, she's an idiot.
She's an idiot. She's a stupid person.
Yeah, exactly.
So that is...
That's Joni Ernst.
That's happening.
Future senator from the state of Iowa. First woman elected, statewide elected official.
Taking Tom Harkin's seat.
God, people of Iowa.
Come
who
on
are not
now.
Listening to this podcast, please.
Do the right thing.
Do something.
Fix this.
God. Yeah.
In any case, there was an interesting article in Politico this week
that
was about what to do if you're a Latino voter, or like what's to do about Latino voters. Because Latino voters are basically, I mean, understandably pissed that we've seen no movement on immigration, both from the Republicans and Democrats.
Right.
So they're sort of like, well, what the fuck are you guys up to?
Right.
So there's sort of like, I mean, there's sort of like this opening, I think, for Latino voters to sort of find their own party.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's one of these things where, like, the longer that we don't do anything about it, the more of an issue it becomes for them, which I don't think that a lot of people understand,
right.
like, in the way that it just really sort of, like, it's an exponential issue. Like, the longer that you don't do anything about it, because, like, what I found really interesting in this article was that there is was a recent Gallup poll that indicates the number of Latinos ranking immigration as a top issue doubled since just the first half of this very year.
Yeah.
So it's, like, the longer that this sort of, like, rots away as like a non-issue,
right.
like
the more important it gets,
the more important it gets, and the more pissed they get. Because the other poll that they reference in this article was a Pew Research poll that shows that now a majority of Latino voters think the Democratic Party is doing a poor job on immigration. So we have sort of like always counted on them for votes, and also sort of like promised them that we were going to deal with it. Obama has run twice on doing something about immigration.
Yeah.
He sort of threw him a bone with his own version of the DREAM Act, like, which was right before the 2012 election, which I think now they are probably seeing as sort of like the campaign bone that he was throwing them, which it probably was. I mean, it was the right thing to do.
Right.
But I mean, like, you know, it was sort of like it was a one-off little thing.
It was a thing he could do in a world where he can't do much.
Right.
To make it look like he's doing something. Exactly. Yeah. No, but there's, you know, it's not like Latino voters can really rely on the Republican Party. They can't, you know, there was a time when, because Latino voters are very socially conservative, there was a time when the Republican Party was sort of in play for them. But the Republican Party is so racist and horrible and anti-immigrant that there is just not room for them to take these voters back.
Right.
So the Democratic Party was sort of the natural resting place for this
cohort of
voters, the lesser of two evils. And now even the Democrats really can't be trusted to act on this very important issue that is especially important to Latino voters.
Right.
So, we're in an impasse. Because, like, who the fuck are they going to vote
for?
What do you do?
So, this Politico article sort of had a suggestion, or not really necessarily a suggestion, but just sort of like, you know, is it time for them to start their own political party?
Right.
Which is sort of like an interesting theory. You know, there's sort of a model for this. Like, there are a lot of sort of like, you know, groups in Europe that are basically like based on
like
sort of like
the Basque nationalists have
like
a party,
that's like an
Scottish
ethnic
national
party
basically.
So like, do they start their own political party?
Yeah.
I mean, I hope that they wouldn't. That would be bad for the Democrats more than it would
be
the Republicans.
But I mean, it would certainly. And when this is important to us, especially because there are a lot of purple states that we have talked a lot about turning blue on the backs of Latino voters, basically.
Well,
Arizona,
Texas.
Eventually Texas. Yeah. I mean, these are states that we were anticipating turning blue because they have a huge number of Latino voters who were, you know, disappointed about how just like horrendous the Republicans are on immigration.
Right.
This is not an option if Latino voters either decide not to vote, which is something that, you know, Latino activists are talking about sitting out the midterm elections in certain situations or in certain places because they're just sort of like, well, there's no one for us to vote for. Why are we going to bother?
Right.
But it also, I mean, I think especially on a local level, if they started their own party, it would be a huge force to contend with.
Yeah, I think so,
I mean, I think that would be a wake-up call. If I were them, I would do it.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that we can figure out a way to bring them back into the tent with the Democrats,
because
I think that a lot of Democrats who aren't Latino voters want to do something about immigration. I mean, I certainly want to do something about immigration.
Well, and
so
I
don't feel like this is just a Latino issue.
And I think what the Democrats probably need to do is remind them that they have tried. I mean, I realize it's sort of, you know, obviously nothing got done and maybe they're mad at the president, but I mean, like, lest we forget, the Senate passed a comprehensive immigration bill
that the House
will not even vote on, and they're sort of like focused on like building a giant fence. So I think that, yes, I obviously get why they would be frustrated because like nothing has been done,
but they're sort of frustrated.
It is not through lack of Democratic trying.
Yeah.
I mean,
It's just going to be a challenge, I think, for the Democrats to like make that case, because it's been a challenge for them to make the case to us about a number of things,
issues,
you know, that
totally.
as the sort of left-leaning part of the party, you know, we sort of hold up a different part of the tent, and we have been having a hard time getting convinced that they're up to anything because they are terrible at everything. They are very ineffective at governing.
That's it.
That is their problem. And even in this, you know, sort of contentious environment, a stronger party would have had more options than they have given themselves.
Yeah.
You know, it's so, you know, what are you going to do?
Agreed.
It's just annoying. Meanwhile, if you're a customer of Chase or any store or bank, you might have noticed that everything in the world has been hacked by Russian hackers recently. JPMorgan Chase just had like a huge security breach over the summer that they're still kind of tallying the damage of. But apparently more than 83 million households and businesses were sort of intruded upon in these attacks. And apparently, although this has not really, you know, sort of been reported widely, there were 9 other financial institutions that also were targeted in these attacks, which is a lot of fucking people.
Right. Too many.
Too many people. The hackers are thought to be Russians, and people are sort of suggesting they might have some ties to the Russian government, which is the most Russian thing I've ever heard in my life.
Totally.
And people are even... There's a couple of senior officials who have been anonymous in these stories, but who have suggested that it might be that the Russians are supporting this because we sanctioned them. Like, the Russian government is sort of like, fuck them. Tell J.P. Morgan Chase that we hate them. Yeah. You know, like, that's... I mean, that's sort of far-fetched, but also, if there was ever a place that that's a possibility, it's...
It would be there.
It's Russia.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe that's a thing.
Right. Now, supposedly... The thing that scares me about this is because, like, I mean, like, obviously there's clear things to be scared about, but, like, whenever, you know, when there was the Target breach, and I think it was, like, who else? Home Depot or something like that. I mean, there's this sort of, like, these big box stores have, like, had, like, debit card breaches and stuff like that, and then you have to, like, get a new debit card. So
it's a pain.
You always find out, sort of, like, as the story unfolds, that it was, like, way worse than expected.
Yeah.
So, like, I know that, like, something like 83 million people or something have been, like, affected by this. That's a lot, obviously, but, like, they're saying that none of their, like, financial,
Information was stolen, just like their addresses and email addresses,
which is still a problem because, like, then they can sort of, like, you know, they can send you emails as if they're, like, sending you an email, like, from the bank or whatever like that. So, like, that's still a problem, but, like, I don't trust that to actually be the case.
No, absolutely,
like,
not.
You don't hack into, like, a bank's, I don't, what, I almost said mainframe. Is that a thing? Is that, this seems like an 80s word to say or something like that. I don't know. But, like, and then, like, only.
And then you're like, oh good, just, everyone's email address is right here.
Right, uh-huh. Just
like, now I can send them emails.
Like, that's not it. That's not what you're doing.
No, that's not what you're up to. And I mean, on a sort of, on a individual level, I feel like my credit card gets hacked like twice a year. It's like someone at a gas station has figured out how to hack my credit card all the time.
For
so
sure.
Like, that's not that hard, I don't think. Once you've broken into their mainframe, as we'll call it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that hard for them to reach the financial information ultimately, because if people at gas stations are making it happen, I don't see what could be so secretive about it, you know, getting it done at Chase. I feel like the sort of only thing that we can kind of have, you know, that can comfort us is that there it was sort of like strength in numbers. 83,000 names and addresses is a lot of people to screw over. So hopefully we'll sort of...
Wait, wasn't that 83 million?
I mean, 83 million. Sorry. 83 million. That's more people.
That's
bigger than a lot of countries. But that is really fucking annoying.
Yeah.
And there are some issues with the regulations that we have here, because the requirements to report these things to the federal government are on a state-by-state basis. So different states have different requirements in terms of financial institutions reporting these breaches. Hmm. And so we don't know if if everyone who experienced something like this recently has reported it yet.
Right.
Or at all. Which is another problem. Or if they know. Yeah, because Chase was sort of like, well, they got someone's administrative, you know, privileges, and then they... Yeah. Like, that sounds kind of easy. I don't
know. I know, right?
Sounds too easy.
Yeah.
And they also... There was a file that they got that contained a list of every application and program that is used on the standard J.P. Morgan computers, which is also concerning because it means they can find backdoors to other programs.
Exactly.
It's bad news.
Yeah.
Meanwhile.
Oh, God, this is bad news, too.
Here's some other bad news.
Shocking news. And this was sort of, you know, kind of reported this week, but, like, I don't think that it probably got, like, the sort of, like, full-throated reporting that it really deserved, because it's terrifying. So, there was a study by the scientists at the WWF, the World Wildlife Foundation, and
the Zoological Study of London.
Right, and it basically, what it concluded was that the overall animal population fell 52% between 1970 and 2010. That's 1970, not 1270.
Right, that's 40 years ago. Like,
40 years ago, we had twice as many animals as we have right now.
Right. That's not what you want.
That's, like, wacko bonkers to me. Like, that's really hard to understand. It's hard to get in your brain.
Yeah. Also, consider how many years human civilization has existed.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, that's why I said it was like, this is not, we're not talking about, like, we haven't been charting this since, like, the Dark Ages.
No.
Like, this is like,
it's
this
not
was
like
when,
since Roman times.
This
like,
was when a lot of you people who are listening to this were potentially born.
Yeah.
I mean,
this is
like, if you're 45, then you were alive when we had twice as many animals.
Exactly. Must have been nice back then. I wouldn't remember it.
Yeah.
So we were already well on our way to losing half of our animals by the time I was born.
Yeah.
But this is also something that seems to be increasing exponentially because even, you know, in 2012, they did a similar report that suggested that there had been a 28% decline over a similar period. Now, this report included a lot more types of animals and habitats and things like that. Right. And that's why they've got, because it turns out that there were certain areas where they saw much faster declines. In other areas, like rivers and freshwater systems had massive declines. And tropical areas had massive declines. Yeah. And certain regions, like Latin America and Asia, had the biggest declines. Latin America had like 83%
of, like, decline. Fish and birds and reptiles, like, everything.
All the animals. Like, part of it is that this study was a little bit more expansive, but it also seems to suggest that, like, this is speeding up over time.
Right.
Like, this is getting worse.
Yeah.
And, you know, they said that a lot of it is due to habitat destruction and commercial fishing and hunting, but they also think that climate change obviously could be a factor.
Yeah.
And no one's really able to measure the consequences of it that easily because it's sort of hard to sort of know what is and is not related to climate change because everything is just a fucking mess.
Yeah.
But in any case, this is terrible news. Even for people that dislike animals like myself, I just feel like I'm happy to have them exist.
Well, and
I don't want to touch them. That's fine. I live in a big city. I shouldn't have to.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, we don't have to tell you about, you know, I mean...
We don't have to tell you why we need animals.
Right, exactly.
You should know. If you don't know...
The whole world is a, you know, it's a big ecosystem.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Something.
Something like that.
We're all supposed to... You need animals. You just gotta have animals.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even in cities we have animals.
Yeah.
We have rats.
I live with one.
Brent has one in his house.
Yeah.
Isn't it weird that you just, like, have a little animal that you just, like, live with?
Yeah, I love her to death, but every once in a while I'm like, what is this... Like,
why did I invite this weird animal to come live in my house?
Sleeping in my bed
me?
Right now.
Yeah.
What are you doing here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing.
Bless her heart.
Yeah. Well, it's like how I used to name all the rodents that I noticed in my house. Jeremy the mouse.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Harold.
Yeah.
There was a cockroach named Harold at one point. Mm. Jeremy I never saw, thankfully.
You had one, like, recurring cockroach?
Well, he recurred twice.
Oh,
also, I call all cockroaches Harold. And assume that it's a friendly visit from Harold. It makes me feel happier knowing that Harold is visiting than it is to think that a new cockroach came into
Fair
my
enough.
Life.
Yeah.
Harold and I have an understanding.
I see.
I once killed Harold, and he survived my killing him somehow.
Well,
so
that's the thing with cockroaches.
That's the thing about cockroaches.
Yeah.
You can't kill him.
One animal who is not faring so well in this new sort of, like, animal
free
killing
world.
Era that we're in right
walruses.
Now is the walruses.
Who I feel very close to because it turns out they're pretty much scared of everything.
Right, they're like
you.
Like
I am. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like me and walruses are actually pretty close.
Yeah.
But they like to hang out on ice because that's what they do.
That's what they do.
They like live on floating ice and then they like, you know, they're on the sea ice and then they dive into the water and they fish and then they have their babies on the ice and then they, you know.
Yeah. Problem is we don't have ice anymore.
There's no more ice. So it's been very difficult for them to find the ice to hang out on, which is what they like to do.
Right. So this week, a lot of people were posting this because it was like a crazy picture.
It's a crazy visual,
But there, a pilot spotted like what they've now estimated at 35,000 walruses, like all getting together, like in what's called Point Lay in Alaska, where they were all just like literally just because
huddled
they were
together.
They just huddled together like on the land because there's no ice and they just all just went there. Yeah. I mean, it's just like a
walrus. This has happened a few times in the last few summers. I think since 2007, that's the first time we noticed it. But they. You know, walruses are social, so they hang out together. So they're sort of inclined to go hang out in groups. But this is much larger than the groups that they normally hang out in. And they just sort of like, it's Alaska in the summer and there used to be ice there and now there's not. And so they're just sort of like congregating on beaches. It's hard for them to feed themselves over there. It has led to some very tragic issues where they are scared of everything. So they periodically stampede when they hear like noises and things.
Yeah, they do.
And like, they stampede their young by accident in the process.
Yeah, they've been saying, they've been telling the locals to like not go there. Like don't go to look at them. Like don't take pictures. Don't, you know, they've been rerouting planes over the area because those scare them too. Like literally anything.
Yeah.
All the things scare them.
Yeah.
And when you're in a pile of 35,000.
Right. You rush out to see because you're scared of a noise.
You can't afford to get scared.
No, exactly.
In that situation.
You shouldn't have to get scared, by the way, in that situation. 35,000, they could take over Alaska with that kind of population.
They could.
That's about as many people as live in Alaska.
To.
They might have to. Yeah, they might need more land than they currently have because there's no more sea ice.
No.
Yeah. But anyway, it's both tragic and also a really compelling visual.
Yeah.
And it also makes me feel close to walruses because I feel like we would really get along. We would both be scared of each other. They probably wouldn't come up to me.
Well, so many of these animals, I mean, rely on the sea ice.
Yeah.
And I don't think that, like, you know, we talk about sort of global warming broadly or right. climate change, but I don't,
but there's,
you know,
specific,
like, this
animals,
is like,
and this ecosystems, when they get destroyed, like, those animals still exist
right.
and have to figure out what to do, and then they don't exist anymore because they couldn't figure it out.
Right, exactly. And the thing about sea ice, too, is that, like so many things with climate change, it's very exponential, because the yeah. thing about sea ice is, like, the ice itself sort of reflects the sunlight. So it, I mean, the sun melts it, obviously, right. but, like, so the less sea ice you have, it sort of, like, exponentially goes away, because, like, the water basically sucks up
right.
the sun and becomes hotter. So it's, like, the less ice you have, it's not just, like, melting at, like, a single rate, basically. Like,
right,
it's
melting
exponential
from below,
because,
and
like,
above.
Right, so it's not...
And you can't get this, it back. What are you going to...
You can't get it back.
It's,
that's the thing.
Not
it's, like,
coming back.
It's not going to refreeze, like, no. at least anytime in the near future. So, like, these walruses are, like, I mean, that's what's sad about it, is that
yeah.
they're fucked.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately. Yeah. There's
polar bears also like sea ice, and I yeah. feel very close to polar bears, because yeah. I used to call them Lila Nordstrom's when I was a kid.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. Yeah. But there's really sort of, like, almost nothing,
there's nothing to be done.
Which
there's
is...
nothing to be done except to hopefully halt any further destruction right. of their habitat, which right. we're not successfully doing.
But even
doing.
Still, if there's no sea ice, it's like, what if, do the walruses go away?
I mean, right. Like we, and it
know.
Sounds like they're very nice. So it sounds like we don't want them to go away.
Yeah, they're
you
just
know?
scared
they're not,
little...
They're not black widows. I would, if black widows wanted to go away, I'd be like, do
yeah,
your
sure.
thing. I don't
yeah.
care.
Yeah.
If we destroyed black widow habitats, which would, I guess, be all of the urban housing in LA, because they're fucking everywhere,
yeah.
then I would just sort of handle it.
Yeah.
But agreed. Walruses seem nice, you know?
Yeah, right? They're lovely.
Yeah. So that's bad.
Yeah.
And then, in final news, we're seeing a sort of hilarious protest afoot.
I love this.
In San Francisco.
I love this so hard.
This is
I just, like, can't
exciting
even tell
times.
You. Yeah.
And we especially love it, I think, because we live in LA, which is the capital of people with annoying dietary restrictions.
Oh, the worst.
The worst. Like, it is not just... unheard of here, and it's not embarrassing if you're a person who's asking these questions to hear, like, oh, is there a gluten-free option? Is there a dairy-free option? Is there, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
asking for, like, ridiculous changes to men, like, you know, going to restaurants that are Italian restaurants and needing a gluten-free meal is, like, a thing that's happening here.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
Like, these
well,
are...
And also, there's, like, very, very annoying restaurants that cater to these people, too.
Yeah.
You went to one of them recently.
Oh,
the,
my God.
The Gratitude Cafe.
Cafe
where, like,
Gratitude.
Where all of the menu items, like, have some, like, ridiculous, like, name for, you know.
Yeah,
like,
what
are
you have
they,
to
like...
order, like, humble or irresistible or,
yeah.
you know, vivacious.
Just... Yeah.
Like, all the dishes are called things like that. So you already feel ridiculous ordering them. Here's a
right.
real issue that I had with that restaurant. I am a person... who likes various kinds of vegan and vegetarian cuisine.
Well, that's
not,
the thing. Like,
some
I
things
love...
don't have dairy or meat in them,
and they're
still
delicious.
Good.
Yeah, exactly. I love vegetables. I can eat a salad with the best of them.
Sure,
I mean,
sure. I hate lettuce, but I will agree with you that that's a possibility. But no, so I expected to go there, and, like, there are a lot of ways to make a vegan meal that are not disgusting. You
right.
know, I wouldn't eat vegan every day because that's not my thing, and
but
I love rare
steak.
There
are just as many ways to make it. Completely disgusting.
Here's the best way to make it totally disgusting. Instead of just making a meal that happens to not include any of the ingredients that vegans can't eat,
right.
make a meal that only includes substitutes for things that vegans can't eat.
Right.
It was like every item on right. that menu had a
fake
cheese
fake meat,
or
a
fake
cheese,
dairy
a
thing
nut cheese.
Or
people
fake
are peddling
nut cheeses.
Nut cheese
for
all
God's
over the place.
Sakes, there's literally a note on the menu that says if you have any food allergies, don't eat here.
Yeah, because they have to, like, use
every fake.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, my food allergies.
Are fake anyway.
Fake anyway. No, well, my shellfish one is real, but I figured right. a vegan restaurant, I wouldn't run into that
no.
problem. But, like, you
but
know.
Your nut allergy.
My nut allergy is fake, thankfully.
You just don't like nuts.
I don't
you
like
didn't
nuts.
Tell people that you're allergic
yeah,
to them.
That's the smart thing to do, guys. But, like, you can't, like, I'm not trying to have my chocolate mousse cake be made with avocado.
Nope.
I get that that's a thing that you could
no.
do if you were experimenting with
just
things.
Just have, like, a fruit dessert or something
but
like that.
Have
because
a, yeah, like, I'm not.
Fruit is vegan.
I'm not trying to have, like, some sort of. Weird, like, cheese dip that has no cheese in it.
No.
If you're going to make a dip that requires cheese, don't make that dip.
Well, and my
like, make a fucking olive paste if that's your
right.
game, because well, that's vegan.
Right. Well, and my thing has always been with these people is that, you know, just don't call it cheese.
Yeah.
Because it's basically it's a like
a
nut
food.
Hummus. It's actually quite delicious.
Yeah.
It's just not cheese.
It's just not cheese. That's not what it is. Cashew cheese is not a cheese food.
No, it's tasty.
It's a nut hummus.
That's it.
It's
that's
a nut hummus.
Is.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
There's bean hummuses and there's nut hummuses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. And if yeah. you want to use it in place of cheese, that's your prerogative.
Yeah.
But let's call a spade here. I can't abide by this. Yeah. In any case.
Right. The story here
is that in San Francisco, there's been a bit of a backlash. And one of the things that gets most derided in these situations is MSG. I actually had a discussion with a friend of mine the other day because it's called monosodium glutamate, no one really knows what it is.
Right.
It is a food that is being used as a condiment in a lot of Asia.
It basically gets used as sort of like a, because it's salt. It's a concentrated salt. It's a concentrated salt. So like it gets used a lot to sort of like, as a quick substitute to sort of like have that kind of like savory, almost like quote umami flavor sort of like, it's basically just like it's a savory, you know, salt. But I mean, it doesn't taste exactly like salt, but it is a salt.
It's a thing that is made out of a concentrated salt.
Right.
So it's being used in Asia for years. Right. We just don't have a word for it because it's an Asian food item.
Right. And
so we call it MSG.
Right. And if you've ever been to Asian restaurants, like you've had it, but also like there are a lot of Asian restaurants everywhere, because I remember this from Iowa, that say like, that will say no MSG.
Yes. Because people are obsessed with MSG.
Yeah.
And I, listen, MSG for some reason makes me feel like I'm high.
Yeah, it gets you high.
So I try not to eat it, but if something has MSG, I'm not like, I can't eat this.
Yeah.
I'm just sort of like, I should be careful because I will feel like I'm high later.
Yeah.
In any case, apparently 2 weeks ago at a restaurant called So, or S-O, in San Francisco, the chef/owner stormed out because picky customers started complaining about him having ingredients in his food, I guess. So he posted this sign that has been circulating the internet, telling everyone to sort of fuck off about MSG and organic and, you know, gluten-free and all these things. Where he was basically like, sorry, like, we have MSG in our food and we don't give a shit about organic. Then earlier this week, Mission Chinese Food, which is a restaurant that I would assume in the Mission.
District,
and got a glowing review from the New York Times.
Yeah.
Put salt shakers full of MSG on their tables and was sort of like, and announced, called it the, said to people that the authenticity option is now available.
I like that, authenticity option.
Well,
yeah.
This is a thing. You can put MSG on your food in a lot of Asia.
Yeah.
They'll just give you some MSG. It sounds sinister because it sounds like a chemical compound.
Well, I was going to say it does, yeah.
So that's why it sounds so sinister.
Yeah.
It is not a food that you cannot, like, naturally eat. It's not like you're actually eating a chemical. You're eating salty salt.
Yeah.
It's just, like, a very salty salt. And that is something you can digest and is not better or worse for you than regular salt. It's just, like, a food.
It's a thing.
A salt food. But it doesn't, like, give you cancer or, like, in some way, you know,
but I like
make
this.
You die.
I like this backlash.
Yeah. This is a great thing to hear.
Right. Whether you like MSG or not.
You don't
like,
have to have it.
Let's just have it.
But let's, why not let it be an option? It makes your food taste better. Sorry about it. It does. Like,
that's it.
And it's also, it is what is getting used in most of Asia to flavor the food the way that it is flavored so that it tastes good.
Yeah.
That is why Asian food tastes the way it tastes. It has MSG in it.
Yeah.
If you've ever been, because in Vietnam, I remember we used to go to this, like, we got all our food.
You spent
a
whole semester being high, didn't you?
I was really high, wasn't it? And there was, like, the Bun Bo place, which was, like, the greatest place. I literally could not find my way home when I walked out of there the last time. I was with my dad, and I was like, I don't know where we're going. I barely can focus on what's going on in front of me, but that was a delicious meal. But the pho place, the woman had just, like, a container of MSG that she would, like, sprinkle into your pho before you got it. And everyone would always be like, oh, I don't want any MSG, please.
Yeah.
And I would be like, your pho tastes disgusting without the MSG. Like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Like, if you don't want it because, like, sometimes I don't want to have MSG because I'm, like, trying not to feel high.
Yeah.
I don't know why it makes me feel that way.
I don't either.
I thought for a long time that maybe I was just having, like, a psychosomatic reaction because people act like it's really bad for you.
Right.
But I don't think I could have been having a psychosomatic reaction before I knew that people were saying that about MSG.
Right.
Like, I could, like, very successfully pick out what dishes had had them or, like, what dinners had and hadn't had MSG based on how high I felt afterwards.
Interesting.
So I don't know. But in any case, I'm excited about this.
Me too.
I hope more restaurants follow suit.
Probably won't catch on in Los Angeles.
No. People are terrible here.
Worst.
Probably. This is the kind of place where if you have any sort of ailment, people suggest that you give up gluten.
Gluten. I know. Even though we've now seen
that's
not a thing.
And also, I'm sorry. Like, if you have, like, acne, like, come up with something more productive than giving up gluten. Is not going to solve your acne or not having gluten. Don't give up dairy. You don't have to eat a ton of dairy, but eating yogurt is not going to stop you from having acne.
No.
Or not eating yogurt is not going to stop you from having acne. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Agreed.
Dairy's fine for you, everybody. MSG is fine for you. Everything's fine for you. You know what's not fine for you? whatever's being served in the middle of the grocery store.
Right, exactly.
Hamburger Helper is not fine for you.
No,
but it's not. Yogurt, dairy.
Fine.
Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. In any case.
If you need diet tips, email us.
Email us with your diet questions. Our answer will generally be to stop being such a weirdo. Fussing. Yeah, yeah, just eat your fucking food. But we will talk to you
next week.
Next week, and when we'll have more thoughts, I'm sure, about these things. Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.